man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Ushacha. And we are about to have an exciting episode. I'm your host, Ifyuati Way, and I'm in the virtual booth with my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have none other than Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
Oh, Ify, I got something that I'm really excited about, but I'm going to preface this by saying if you're like a hardcore food person or even like a softcore food person, or if you are Chinese, I'm about to out myself as a basic bitch because the thing that I am very excited about this week has been around for a while. Everybody knows about it, but I'm slow sometimes on the uptake. Spicy chili crisp. Specifically from a company called Lao Gan Ma in China. It is like the most popular condiment in China. It is the ketchup of China. Mm-hmm. And it has been growing in popularity in the United States over the last few years. And it has finally made its way to me. And I am hooked. This stuff is flavorful, but it is not set your mouth on fire with the chilies kind of thing. It's got some crispy garlic stuff happening. You can put it on like anything. I have not tried it on vanilla ice cream yet. That is a thing that people do. But I just had a nice lunch with, I just had some pasta with some olive oil and the spicy chili crisp. It's flavorful and it's crunchy and it's so great. So if like me, you are way behind the trend on this one, pick up a jar. You won't regret it.
Ooh. Wait, I'm confused as the texture. It's a like it's crunchy, like sprinkle stuff, or it's a
It's crunchy, but it's in a chili oil base. So like you open the jar. And you stir it a bit, and it's wet, and it's also got crunchy bits in it.
Sure. Okay, got it. Visually so locked in. Bits. Sounds amazing. Who doesn't love wet, crunchy bits?
Yeah.
I'm not joking. I sound like I'm joking.
Yeah, but no, I'm
that
there with
really
you.
Did seem like a burn, but okay. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the Wakaba wet ass crunchy bits.
Oh no. Oh no.
That other voice you heard excited about the wet ass crunchy bits is none other than Treya Clark. What's good?
Oh, please don't make me known for that. I don't want people sending me anything wet and crunchy. What's good with me is there is a website, an organization, whatever, called Skype a Scientist. And I can't remember how I heard about it, but I got super psyched. My sister-in-law is a science teacher, a junior high science teacher. So living my nightmare. But she's been doing all of this, obviously, virtual teaching in Minnesota. And so I sent it to her. But in looking at it, basically, if you're an educator or if your family might be interested in this or if you're an individual who wants to talk to a scientist, it's one of those positive angles of the world opening up in unexpected ways because of COVID and all of our living online. And this org has like over 6,000 scientists attached, and you put it on their website and you can say like, you're into earth sciences or whatever. And so they have all of these different people who can either come and speak to your classroom virtually or even a family or a small group of people that you have put together or whatever. So
if you can't convince your brother-in-law to wear a mask, maybe you can get an epidemiologist to explain it to him.
Exactly. If you want to resolve a long-standing argument of like how shaking your soda cans doesn't actually make more bubbles, you know, get a physicist. Why not? So anyway, it's just a cool endeavor, and I'm kind of interested in looking into something like that for my friends. And I keep talking about like online social activities, but I think that sounds fun to talk with someone about their field. That's not also our field. All we talk to is people in film or film adjacent. So anything outside of that is super fun for me.
Indeed. Ify, what's good?
Oh, what's good with me? Well, speaking of film, you know, I've been going around shooting 35mm with my Canon AE-1 program camera, and there's a there's a site that I go to. It's called the Film Photography Project. And so you can get like a lot of like rare film and different things from them. But they just dropped some Halloween film, which is the Dracula 35, the Wolfman 35, and the It 35 millimeter. And my buddy, who's a real film photography geek, who's like, you got to get the It is good. And so it's, you go through and it looks, it has like a light greenish, lime greenish tint to it. It's a Fujifilm film, and I'm real excited to use it. So that's kind of what's good with me. I'm doing some like fun trips coming up. I got to go and do a thing with Rooster Teeth this weekend. So I'll be in Austin for a bit. And then when I come back and stay in the house for a bit, I'm going to go to Ojai by myself and just really zen out and talk to nature, you know.
Oh my god, I'm sure excited, Jan, for how long that's gonna last. Until you start minutes. Broadcasting all of your talks to nature.
All right, well, I guess we'll talk about movies now. Today's show, we're gonna be discussing the 40-year-old version. You know, get the enunciation on that so you know which movie we're talking about. We have a question from the Who Shot Line, and of course we have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment, Itadic, short for Is This Important, Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, is this important, do I care?
This past week, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences added an addendum for the method in which a movie can qualify for nominations at the Academy Awards. Number one, films which are intended for theatrical release but are initially made available through commercial streaming, VOD service, or other broadcast may qualify by making the film available on the secure Academy Screening Room member site within 60 days of the film's streaming / VOD or release or broadcast. Films may qualify with a traditional theatrical release, completing a 7-day run in one of 6 qualifying cities, LA, New York, San Francisco, / Bay Area, Chicago, Miami, Atlanta, screening at least 3 times daily, with at least 1 screening between 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. daily. Additionally, drive-in theaters in these cities will now qualify as a commercial venue. However, the screening requirement will be adjusted from 3 times daily to once daily. Films that have a theatrical release are not required to submit to the Academy Screening Room within 60 days. It is optional. This addendum will be good through February 28th, 2021. Is this important? Do you care?
Yes. I think it's important that the Academy is making steps to acknowledge what the changes have been this year and how that's affected things. I'm also happy that, you know, there's been some mumblings of people who think that they shouldn't even do an Oscars this year, which is ridiculous because we've talked about a number of wonderful films.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of the field shifting is a nice one. There's positive, you know, there's positive possibilities there.
Yes.
All these positive words. I do think the drive-in thing is kind of fun. I've loved seeing the resurgence of that. And the idea, you know, qualifiers for Academy Awards, for Spirit Awards, for Emmys, like they've all been contingent on really specific things over the years. So broadening that is nice. The Emmys had an element of drive-ins as well this year. And it is also interesting, you know, them listing the 6 qualifying cities. Those are your main markets that you're hoping to release in. And not all of them are going to be warm enough to have drive-ins. So it is a big thing. There's a lot of voters, Academy voters in New York, in that area, that are going to be completely dependent on virtual screening. So we'll see. But I'm hoping that this is something that continues to broaden it. That said, there's a finite amount of drive-ins, a finite amount of open theaters, and you have to pay for all of these. Like, make the film available on the Academy Screening Room is not like, oh, a free service that any independent film. The one other thing I'd say is the first sentence in this, films which are intended for theatrical release, but then instead came out through commercial streaming, is key, because there's a lot of films every year that get picked up for distribution but are never intended to have theatrical. Theatrical is growing increasingly difficult, and that's even before COVID. So,
but how do you prove that? Is my
right?
Guess would be
it's going to be completely based on the track record. Like, if you're going through a small distributor, like not even Magnolia, like if
Gravitas Ventures or
Gravitas is mostly digital. If you're looking at like the Shout Factory or Factory 25. Like, there's all sorts of places that don't often have theatricals. So they would really need to prove that they had budgeted for, like, to four wall or whatever.
I mean, one of the few sort of, like, I don't even know if I can use the word upside about 2020, but like the Mission Tiki Drive-In, which is a place in Southern California that I've always loved, was going to close their doors at the end of last year. They were going to hang on for a month or two at the beginning of 2020. And now suddenly, like, they're doing great. Like, this is probably the best year they've ever had. It's become like the location for festival stuff, for premieres, for these, you know, distribution runs that have to happen. So, I mean, like, I, as somebody who is a fan of drive-in theaters in general, I'm glad that they're having this moment, and I hope that it continues even once, you know, things start, you know, once regular hardtop theaters start reopening again. But, you know, yeah, but and to say to follow what Drea was saying about, you know, people talking about canceling the Oscars, I remember a few years back, the year of Michelle Williams was nominated for My Week with Marilyn. Remember that movie?
Oh, yeah.
And Leonard Maltin was on a red carpet at an awards thing and asked her about Meek's Cutoff, the Kelly Reichardt film that she had done the same year. And she said, "You're the first person to ask me about that, like, for this entire award season." And so if we're looking at an award season where a movie like Kelly Reichardt's First Cow is actually part of the conversation because, you know, there aren't a million sappy biopics about, you know, great American inventors or whatever coming down the pike, great, let's be talking about that movie. Let's be talking about, you know, She Dies Tomorrow. Let's be talking about, you know, Crip Camp, like all these amazing films that we've seen this year that don't fit the paradigm of the usual Oscar slogs.
I totally agree. I think, you know, that's kind of like the like silver lining fun side of all this COVID stuff, right? Is all the kind of trying to speculate what the industry and scene's going to look like after this. Because yeah, drive-ins were something that I remember was this cool thing as a kid that I just couldn't find anymore. And I think people are starting to vibe with it because, I mean, you see a movie, you're in your car, you know, you can bring whatever you want. You can bring however many people you want. I hope that one thing that comes out of this this pandemic is that on the other side we have like an Alamo Draft House for drive-ins, you know, like that's the new wave, because I would like that. Sometimes I want to recline all the way back in my car seat and just be vibing.
Hey, you're all driving, have some more drinks. That might be a tricky one to pull off, dude.
Yeah. No, I'm not trying to.
Oh my God. You guys didn't give me any running room for a segue here. So, okay. Speaking of drunk driving, nope, doesn't work at all.
He mentioned COVID a second ago.
I'm not good at these. Okay. So, you guys, fun fact, Alonzo works at The Wrap, and this is about The Wrap. No. The Wrap is reporting that Keira Knightley has left the upcoming Apple TV show, The Essex Serpent, over childcare concerns pertaining to coronavirus. According to Knightley, she could not find a, quote, comfortable scenario to take care of her two children during the production of the show. Apple TV has delayed production, but there has been no official statement from them. Is this important? Do you care? And I'd note here, Liv Tyler also recently announced she would not be returning to Fox's 911 Lone Star over concerns of having to travel from her home in London to where the show is filmed in Los Angeles for some reasons.
It's very important because, you know, we're seeing this sort of tentative move back to production happening, and it's been a little dicey so far. I mean, all of the soaps and the series that have tried to kick back off in the United States specifically, you know, some positive tests come up, and sometimes they work with that and around that, and those people go off and get treated and they continue. Sometimes we've seen a lot of sets get shut down temporarily, you know, like indefinitely. So this is still a formula that production companies have to figure out. And again, you know, like, Y'all can goof on Hallmark Channel all you want. They got 40 new movies this year somehow. I don't know how they did it. I don't know like how much green screen action we're talking about. Yeah, but even for Canada, like
I'm saying that was part of their positive decision.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Canada's in better shape than we are, and they're like testing the hell out of stuff. But like they're making it happen, and a lot of other production entities are not having that same level of success and are really dealing with an uphill battle of like assembling a cast, assembling a crew, you know, like doing testing all the time, making sure that people aren't like doing God knows what on the weekends, you know, and that's going to endanger somebody else. Like, and until that gets fixed, there's nothing in the pipeline.
On the production side of it, I'm part of one of those hidden Facebook groups. It's all production people. Mm. And the, you know, obviously if you may or may not know, in the entertainment industry, the different unions all got together. It took them months to hammer out these guidelines that, but they're also not enforceable. Like the unions can come say that they're going to like pull people if they're not being tracked, but they're not legally enforceable. And the big response from people working production is there's just such a range of attention that's being paid. And so there's certain shows my friend is currently working on, Netflix's You, which is shooting at the Warner Ranch, which has amazing things. Like she has to fill out a test before she leaves her house in the morning, and then has like 15 different stops on the way. And then they're super spread out and they have a ton of PPE and they have protocols and it's all very clear. And then there's other people that just seems very slapdash. So yeah, that's one element. The other thing that this story is of interest to me is there's been an increasing look at how coronavirus and families' responses to it is completely upending gender balance in every industry. That, you know, we've spent decades with women finally entering the workplace, rising to executive positions and all this. And in the pullback in the people who have needed to figure out what they're doing for childcare, which Keira Knightley specifically mentions here, I don't have any beliefs that Keira Knightley is the like sole childcare provider, but it's a different job. And like, I think it was something in September, they figured out that four times as many women than men had left the workforce. These aren't people that lost their jobs. It's are leaving the workforce because they have to take on different roles for their families. And I think that's going to be, we're going to watch the fallout of that, both in maybe even in our entertainment, certainly in our real world from now on. And it's interesting to me that the primary things that I've seen of this have been actresses that are bringing this up as considerations for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild because if you even just kind of step back, you can just see the like all the effects of these, you know, disparities kind of adding to it. Because like I imagine if you are a married actor, you know, couple, and unless, you know, the dude somehow married up, they're both at equal levels, like the chances of the dude being higher paid than the lady is very, so then when they're making that hard decision, then like it's just like little things like that that turn into big things when you have situations like these. So yeah, that's truly unfortunate.
Fine. What a good note to end on.
I know. Yeah. It's you know, speaking of all of that, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking about the 40-year-old version just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun. Video games.
Video games.
Video games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them?
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play?
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies?
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases,
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work,
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm Yos. If you wide away in the studio with me are
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about the 40-year-old version. Drea, would you mind providing us with a synopsis?
I sure would be happy to. The 40-year-old version, which is written, directed, produced, and starring Rada Blank, she plays a character conveniently named Rada Blank, who is playing a playwright in New York City, who is about to turn 40 and whose biggest accomplishment to date was winning a Best 30 Under 30 award. So obviously a good decade before. She's now teaching playwriting to a group of teens while trying to get a project up off the ground with her best friend slash agent. And when she finally does get a little going in the playwriting department, she faces a lot of institutional nonsense and racism. And to let it all out, because she's a creative gal, she also takes up rapping. Because what 40-year-old artist woman shouldn't? Not a rhetorical. I think they all should. So she is a rapper, playwright, struggling artist, finding herself, and she's, you guys, she's finding the 40-year-old version of herself.
Yeah.
See?
Get
it?
The title.
Yeah.
Well, that bastard, Judd Apatow, also took This Is 40. So, you know, what are you going to do?
True. Yeah, exactly. This was a real treat. You know, I came in, Drea was really hyped about this. So I came in, I was like, okay, this is a Drea flick. She's real hyped about this one. Let's see what it's all about.
Were rolling your eyes while you thought that, didn't you?
No.
This is a Drea flick.
I was just like, and what was cool was, you know, the whole film is in black and white, you know, something that we haven't seen since Clerks and The Lighthouse.
Not once done since then.
Yeah. Those are the only two black and white films ever made, Clerks and The Lighthouse. And now this film. Watching this, it kind of took me back to The Five Bloods, when we talked about how like they would insert pictures into the film and would stop, and it would, and this is done in a way that, you know, I think I wasn't the biggest fan of it in The Five Bloods. And then I think here I really liked the way it was utilized. I like the little vignettes that we got of these like videos. And like, it was really, really fun, akin to a director that Alonzo will probably name in his thoughts on the movie. So I was really enjoying that jammer.
Edge of my seat. I'll do one thing and then we can figure out what director Alonzo could allude to. That for me, I'm glad you brought up To Five Bloods. The movies have nothing to do, but this film has a whole lot of early Spike Lee energy to me in terms of so much promise, so much personality, such a point of view. It's so consistently funny, but it has so much to say. It's observational in fascinating ways. It's also the rare film where, you know, she, like you're talking, there's these interstitials of these characters that just sort of live near her on the street. There's the bodega guy. There's the amazing Latina woman who only speaks in Spanish. And there's the homeless dude who shits across the street. And there's this amazing Black woman that I just want to like sit on a bench next to all day and listen to her comments about things. But even they are given consideration. That's one of the things in rewatching this. This was on my list of my favorites from Sundance and then was a staff pick of mine. But in revisiting it, this film weaves in and introduces so many characters, some of them very, very small. And every single one of them, you see more than once. They're not just like utilized for a bump or a small beat. They are brought back. They have a thing. There's two old white biddies who are at the theater who talk through things, like who talk about August Wilson's Fences in this way that killed me to death. It brings in so many things that way that I had a very like Spike Lee's big world building in a small world kind of vibe from.
Yeah, I was thinking about Spike Lee, too, because of, you know, his first feature, She's Gotta Have It, also in black and white. So that's three, Iffy.
Oh, my God. there's three. Okay.
But with these sort of color interludes, the way that she does when she's like, you know, showing her playwriting process, you know, there's this color musical number in the middle of the otherwise black and white. She's got to have it. But yeah, what I liked about this movie is, you know, there's been a lot of, I've seen a lot of conversation recently where people talk about how one of the things that's cool about Lovecraft Country is that, yeah, it's giving you sort of maybe familiar horror tropes, but it's giving them to you with black faces and with black protagonists. You know, there was a whole episode that was very kind of Raiders of the Lost Ark where they're going through like the basement of this museum and there's all these traps and stuff. And it's like, yeah, you've seen that a million times, but I've never seen it with black people, you know. And this movie is this whole sort of like coming of middle age, artist finds her voice, like a lot of different sort of genres that I hadn't seen. But I've never seen them with a black woman at the center of it. And I've certainly never seen a movie where a black woman at the age of 40 and who does not fit the sort of dominant paradigm of film and TV of what people are supposed to look like to be considered sexy is considered sexy. Like she gets a lot of attention.
Yes.
She gets a lot of attention and it's an honest thing because like we are conditioned by movies and TV to think that unlike if you have more than 8% body fat, like the world is going to look the other way. I mean, weirdly enough, to tie this back to the Judd Apatow movies that she's referencing with the title, I to this day hear people talk about like, oh, well, you know, how am I supposed to believe that Seth Rogen is supposed to get like, you know, this super hot woman? I'm like, well, actual Seth Rogen got a super hot woman.
Yeah.
And if guys who looked like Seth Rogen didn't get women, there would be no more guys who looked like Seth Rogen. So like, you know, it's just plus like, and who's to say that Seth Rogen isn't smoking hot? He is. So I like the fact that she is so sort of unapologetically, I don't know Rada Blank's work before. I haven't seen her stuff, but I mean, she is putting herself out there and allowing herself to be this object of interest and attention and lust of people who are around her, and that she is taking on this thing of like the last thing in the world you would expect a pushing 40 woman to do is to become a rapper, and she's doing it, and she's addressing topics that like mainstream hip hop is certainly not talking about. There's a lot going on. I love you said about the side characters is true, like all the teens in her class have very distinct identities and are interesting. The agent friend, the a-hole white producer, there's a lot happening to me that I think is just really delightful.
Yeah, I think one of the things to go back to like her being desired, I think that's one of the things that I like about it too, is that I feel like whenever we're talking, whenever we see media and focus on women aging, it's always about like their physical looks, their beauty, and it's like, oh, you're not as beautiful, and that's, it's not what this is about. It's about her career. Like she has that, she has dudes calling for her all the time. This film isn't about that. There is a love interest, but that none of that takes into account like you know her actual beauty, which is kind of refreshing because it just wants, you know, to jump all the way back to Itadick. One of the sides is just like the way gender roles are kind of like sprinkled in. And I think that's also why, like, a lot of times you have like, probably a lot of men being like, well, you know, obviously you're going to be the one staying at home, taking care of the kids, right? Since, you know, like, I think that's all is trickles down through media. And you see that because like, what's important to women, her beauty. Dudes, when they're coming of age stuff is like, oh, are they going to make it to partner in this legal firm? And this was like such a fun movie that kept me just kind of engaged and interested. And I too, was really rocking with just how desired she was up top of the film. You know,
I love what you said, Iffy, about the crucial arc of this is her ambition and wanting to make a mark. And I find if people have various levels of ambition in themselves, but if you're ambitious and it has an artistic thread to it, if the mark that you want to make, that's both more, it's less tangible and more difficult to attain than like, I would like to
earn $1 million,
move up the ranks in my job or whatever. And I think, you know, they give a nice parallel of how she's talking about her recently deceased mother, which is another thread that I think is handled really beautifully of how it's affected her mental state. But the idea of wanting to make a mark as an artist means so many different things to different people. And for her, of like what you need in terms of the gatekeeping, and you know, she ends up like, she takes this job writing for this super obnoxious white producer and who takes her story about gentrification in Harlem and immediately is like, well, here's the thing, we definitely need some white characters so we know who's gentrifying. And she's like, excuse me. So I found this movie, which is, and I also, yeah, it took on all of these big issues in very believable ways. And in terms of her directing, because I'd love to talk about that for a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a first time feature. I've seen so many of these. There are so many beautiful touches in this, like these comedic moments that she knows to include and she knows where to put the camera. There's this moment that these aren't the things, like when you are prepping your days and you have a very like limited time frame to get things done, so you're just looking for your coverage, the idea of building it into your schedule for the day, she has a shot where like the camera's across the street and she's leaving, she wanted to like go in and record some bars and basically fell asleep at the studio. And she's trying to slam the door on her way out, but it's one of those big doors that's got like a built-in gentle thing. So it's like just gently. So she's just like struggling with this door across the street. It's this beautiful comedic moment. Having the instincts to do that as a first timer is just so impressive to me.
I think it's a very assured debut, and you're right, there are these little moments that low budget movies often don't have the opportunity to fit in. I will say, if there's one thing that I think sort of marks it as first feature, it's a little long.
Yes.
It's a little long. This movie does not need to be over 2 hours. But, you know, that's a tiny thing. Because I can't even point to a thing and be like, oh, well, this all has to go.
Yeah. Right. Part of it's because she made such an effort that even all the small characters got a bit, and like her best friend has his arc. Like, in trying to make sure all these people were responsible, you're like, oh, so this is long, but it certainly didn't feel bloated.
It's generous.
That's nice.
Yeah, and I feel the exact same way, where it's like, I would not be the one who could be like, you could cut this and this, but this feels like it could be so tight if it was like just trimmed down a little bit, because it just feels like one of those movies that would be kind of like those quick jaunts, you know what I mean, where you're like,
but like, ooh, what are you gonna get rid of that sassy auntie?
Not at all. I'm gonna give her more time. I'm gonna get as much more time as I can give that. Especially that last end of movie interstitial bit that they had. That was real cute. Oh my gosh. Yeah. No. I don't. Yeah. I also
love when you know, and I've seen this a lot in queer cinema over the years, but when people who are from communities that are not often, you know, allowed to tell their own stories and center themselves in their own stories, when they can also use that moment to critique the kinds of films that people outside of the community make about that community. So like, she has this entire rap about poverty porn that is brilliant. Oh. And it's so much about how like, so much of white funded art about black people is about black suffering. And it's like, give me that teen mom shooting up in the alley. Give me the rats in the housing project. And it's this thing of like, you know, why? Who's that for? Why is this the only thing you want to see out of, you know, from us? You know, it reminds me of like just the new queer cinema movies of the early 90s. Part of that was a reaction of like, we're not all just like, you know, saintly AIDS, you know, patients who are going to expire in the arms of the straight guy who's going to learn something, you know? Yeah. So I like that she was able to throw in so much stuff about like, what is it you want from black people's art? And how about you let us tell our own story so that we don't have to, you know, like create this nonsense for you.
Oh yeah. Her interactions with, you could tell that the black actress there's a woman playing the black actress in the play that she's written, and they've clearly collaborated before, and she starts to ask some, like, one of them is one of
why
the lines
is she speaking
is
like this,
why is she speaking like this,
because Stacey Sargent,
she literally has a line that's something like, why has it gots to be this way? And she just shuts it down and is like, why is she speaking this way,
her husband doesn't
no one
speak
else
that
speaks
way.
This way, yeah, so it really, it does it's taking on so many intricate and problematic issues in art and in other things in a way that is meaningful and thought-provoking, but
and
continually
funny,
super fun to watch. And I'll talk quickly about her rapping, because you guys, she's a freaking great MC. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, there's always the thing with these when they're like, oh, she's going to try singing, and you're sort of braced like, oh, she's not going to be a good singer, is she? She's a beautiful MC. She writes great things. I have been trying to word for word remember her rap about white men with black women's butts,
yeah,
because it's my favorite thing of the year. I want to learn it like I wanted to learn the rap from Always Be My Maybe. And then that's what I'm going to take those two on the road. But it's the kind of like her getting into her poverty porn song. Like, those are this very sort of Talib Kweli, Mos Def, like this kind, yeah, of, you know, music that exists that's about sort of social issues in this beautiful way. Do we all want to be best friends with Radha? Is this just me?
Exactly, what I want to do.
I want to go for ice cream.
It's time for us to rate this
movie.
I mean, I think this, people know what it's going to be. So, but we'll let Drea start. So for our final review of the 40-year-old version, would you screen it, stream it, or skip it?
I would be screen it. I've said nothing but screen it words this whole time, so I probably don't need to say them anymore. I think this is wonderful. I cannot wait to see what she does next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Screen it. This is a vibrant film debut from a very talented writer and performer and filmmaker. Like, she's bringing all this stuff to the table. And I want to see what other story she has to tell.
Yeah, and you know your boy is out here letting you know that you should indeed be screening it. Because, everyone's kind of said it. It's a phenomenal film. I am also excited to see what's happening. I texted a buddy of mine who, you know, he raps, and I was like, you got to check it out. He's like, I was excited about this movie. And I was like, okay, everyone has their ears to the street except for me. So definitely, yeah, worth checking out. But for now, we going to hit the course and then take a quick break, because we'll be right back after you hear from another show for Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man, sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks every week. Myself, and I'm Morgan Rhodes, and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Shots. Yeah, I'm your host, Ify Wideway, in the studio with me, Har.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Drea Clark.
And now it's time to play a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, play that call.
Hello, Who Shot Your friends. This is Justin, and I'm calling from Minnesota, land of Prince, and Bob Dylan, and the one and only Drea Clark. Calling with a couple of things I wanted to mention. First, a couple episodes ago, the question was posed about, have there been any directors whose best work has come on a streaming platform? I would argue that Alfonso Cuarón's Roma would fit that bill. That would be my vote for the top of that particular list. And then I had a question. Recently, I saw the movie Breakfast at Tiffany's for the first time, and I found it charming, and I loved it. And then every so often, Mickey Rooney would be on the screen, and it was just taking me out of the whole damn experience. So, my question is there any movie like that for y'all? Something that you've enjoyed, but then all of a sudden, something has just pulled you right out of it, wrecked the movie for you, and how would you go about fixing it? Thanks.
I like the moment of silence for racism that we got. I was like, yeah, we got to start doing that more. Let's have a moment of silence for racism.
Yay, Justin! From Minnesota.
Way to brown nose Drea there,
yeah,
Justin.
I'll take it.
Really,
hey,
really.
It works for this gal. You get an A+ for your question, sir. I think that you also get an A+ for the Roma nod. Here's to Roma. This is tricky because, you know, the more that you revisit older films, which you should be doing because there's so many great films out there that so many people haven't seen. But we're also in a different cultural mindset all the time. We're constantly evolving. We're constantly aware of things that we didn't flag the first time. I remember recently, I think it's playing on some channel constantly, but Legally Blonde, which a movie I adore that I had seen several times, loved it back in the day, was playing. So I had it on when I was like eating or something. It was the courtroom scene. I was like, yes, this is when she's going to burn the girl about perm rules. Who doesn't love stories about old courtroom talking hair? But instead it was the part of the courtroom scene where she basically, the Reese Witherspoon character, busts through that one of their witnesses is faking it because it's the pool boy that the mother was apparently having an affair with. And then he identifies these shoes as being Prada. And she's like, oh, aha, he's a homosexual. And I had this small like, yeah, that didn't ping for me then. And now I'm like, well, that's not cool. All sorts of people can know what sort of shoes are what shoes. Also, he can know that and desire sleeping with both men and women.
I was about to say, yeah. Like, there's a lot of ways that could go south.
Which is distinctly probably less problematic than Mickey Effin' Rooney, which is the gold standard.
I was going to say, that's a goat of embarrassing.
It really is.
I mean, film history is littered with so many of these. I talked about The Party one or two weeks ago, that's not even like an occasional pop-up. That's like every damn scene. There is Peter Sellers in brownface, recently with Dave, he was going through and watching for the first time, like the entire Judy Garland filmography. And you would be surprised how many times young Judy Garland does blackface in a movie, in a showbiz context, because it was the 30s and that's just what you did, apparently. This stuff kind of pops up all the time, and as much as you wish you could like trim it or CG it out somehow, but it's sort of like, let this be a reminder, this is what popular culture looked like when people who weren't straight white Christians, didn't have a voice to be like, no. That is stuff that happened, and it's horrible, but it did happen, and we can't pretend it didn't, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. Wait, you're saying that just because some of our history is bad, we shouldn't pretend it didn't happen at all. In fact, we should maybe now look into it further to see
Call
where
me crazy.
Our negative history. That's. I wonder if you could apply that to education as
what
well.
What if we learned something from our mistakes after acknowledging that they were in fact mistakes?
Yeah,
I'm just saying, and it's crazy talk. I know.
That I feel the exact same way, where there is this in the era of where we're trying to like scrub the annals of time at the same time that people are denying the fact that a lot of these things happen. It's more danger, does more harm than good. I mean, it's already happened. The people have already shot it. They've already made the money. So what is erasing it going to do but pretend it never happened? And I think it's so many movies, especially because I'm a 90s kid, so many movies in the 90s were dropping the F word just so flippantly. And you're just like, okay, this is how we were living, huh? And for specific movies, which one is that I watched recently, and I talked about it briefly on here, but Romeo Must Die really went, it was instead of Montague Capulets, it was the Asians versus the black people, and it was every derogatory term for Asians you've ever heard of and never wanted to hear again.
Start listening for the F word in 80s comedies.
Oh my gosh. Oh, you know, so yeah, it's I agree with everyone words it, and I agree with you too. It like kind of jolts you out of it because it's so weird, because, you know, hopefully you're not hearing it in your day to day from your from anyone that you know.
Especially in a movie like Legally Blonde that is so like effervescent and you know, life affirming in so many ways. Like, oh.
Well, I do think it's good that those things jolt us in a way that they didn't.
Well, yeah, like, if we didn't notice.
Exactly. This is telling me, as an audience member and a person in society, I'm also evolving and paying better attention. But, you know, I think we've touched before on a movie like 16 Candles, which is riddled with problems. You have your Long Duk Dong character, which is just a direct descendant of Mickey Rooney's horrible, obviously played by an actual Asian person. So a little different, but it's just stereotypical through and through. But then there's entire scenes where, did it ever occur to me when I first watched 16 Candles and fell in love with Jake Ryan, that he was a man handing over his drunk, passed out girlfriend to another boy to do whatever he wanted with her, and that was a problem? No, it did not. Does it occur to me now? Yes. And so it's those things. You can, I think art is a great way for us to mark where we are culturally and to pass along that knowledge. Like, if you're watching those things, if something makes you uncomfortable and unhappy, stop watching. Like, no lesson is worth you feeling demoralized by the viewing of it. But if it's something that you really enjoy, like Breakfast at Tiffany's, and you want to take that in and it's sort of reconciling those things, then great. Are you talking? Are you watching with someone else that you can then talk about and parse that through? Like, I think that's one of the great things that art does for us. It's not just escapism. It's not just to disappear for a minute. It's to bring about a lot of thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, if you want to talk about, you know, the conversation about Jewish people in the Merchant of Venice, that's a conversation worth having.
And who doesn't? I'm always like, iffy, talk to me about the Merchant of Venice.
Well, yeah, so maybe we'll have to do that in one of our throwback episodes. But thank you to everyone who's called in. Please continue to do so. The number for the Who Shot line is WSY8031664. And now it's time for our staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Andrea, why don't you start?
All right. So my staff pick is a documentary that played at Sundance. I know I'm doing that, but like, I like to remind people of those festival hits. It is directed by a woman named Garrett Bradley, and it follows a woman named Sybil Fox Richardson, who's been fighting for the release of her husband, Rob, who has been serving a 60-year prison sentence. The film is called Time, and it is currently available on Amazon Prime. And this one is incredible. It will change, I think, how you look at documentaries. It's sort of bookended by really beautifully edited archival footage of this family. The father of the family, and he has, I think they have five or six sons. They have a large family of strapping young men who are growing up separate from their father. And what this family tells you about how incarceration affects families, communities, societies, how we view it, the injustice in the justice system, the love that can run throughout. I cried many times. There's something about there's shades of, you know, a film like Boyhood, which is effective in a lot of ways because you're seeing characters grow. A documentary that takes that on, has these archival things. Garrett Bradley was with the family for years putting this together, and it's a heartbreaker and makes you think, and it's so, so worth it. I think it'll be a big speaking point this year, and it's a documentary definitely worth your time. Bring a Kleenex and a full heart.
All right. Well, Alonzo, what do you have for us?
So this is a film that I really liked in 2008 and had not really gone back and revisited. And I recently had the wonderful opportunity to talk to the director, Kimberly Pierce, on another podcast that I do. And she is going to be hosting this film on TCM next week. But if you don't get TCM, you can also watch this film on Amazon Prime. It is Stop Loss, which stars Ryan Phillippe and one of the first big starring roles for Channing Tatum. She kind of cast him just based on the audition, even though he wasn't really, you know, the thing that he would become yet. And it is about soldiers who fight in Iraq and who get sent back when they've ostensibly done their duty and finished out their time with the military, but as sort of a backdoor draft because they weren't getting enough new incoming soldiers. They just forced the returning ones to go back again and again and again. And, you know, it's obviously a movie that is about sort of real social issues, but also is kind of just a drama of these characters and what combat has done to them and what they come home to and how the people in their lives handle them after they've come back from the war. It's a really gorgeous film. It's shot by, you know, the great Chris Menges. And, you know, just generally speaking, like a really powerful film that did not do very well because at the time, like, no movie about the Iraq War did well. Like, people just did not want to buy a ticket to see that. And I hope that this TCM screening and whatnot kind of maybe gets this movie rediscovered because it really is powerful and it holds up very well after 12 years. So, yeah, Stop Loss.
Well, for me, you know, I was going with another classic, basic, iffy pick, which is simply the fact that I'm going to, you know, go give you a rap music for rap music. I mean, rap movie for rap movie. And I'm going to say 8 Mile, y'all. I need y'all to watch that. You know,
I thought about 8 Mile during this movie.
I'm going to give you that. And you'll see why you'll really feel the Oscars that I will remind you were this year when Eminem showed up and finally performed and ended that whole story.
They needed to do that because they're not going to have an in-person Oscars for so long. They were just planning ahead.
Hey, you know what? But I hope Rada Blank gets to perform this year and do White Boy with a Black Woman's Butt or whatever that song is.
Yes, that's what I want.
Oh my gosh, that would be elite.
I want Jane Fonda in a ball gown introducing her. Yes.
Yeah. So that's our staff picks. You know, so
check
them out.
Wait, Iffy, it's weird through the Zoom. Is there spaghetti on your shirt? Is that your mom's spaghetti?
Oh my gosh. I want everyone to know I did look down at my shirt, which by the way is the stupidest shirt I'll ever own, is a Ted Nugent Black Power Tour shirt. I only own this shirt because a friend said he was somewhere and it was one on the rack and he wanted me to have it so a white person wouldn't be able to wear it. I said,
that's
all right,
fair.
I will wear a Ted Nugent shirt, ironically. I can't wait to wipe my ass with it eventually. But now it is time for 5-star reviews. After giving a 5-star review of this shirt, time to hear if you have any 5-star reviews of our past, of cast. Now, don't review our past, please.
No.
This one comes from A Parmesan. This podcast threads the needle perfectly between recommending arty cinema like Portrait of a Lady on Fire. This is the umpteenth POLF. Shout out in the reviews, and only watching Space Jam for the rest of my life. Thank you. Come on and jam. I love the enthusiasm that the hosts bring and that they don't look down their noses at movies that are just fun and not artsy, and that they bring a wide variety of perspectives to their analysis, commenting not just on film as film, but film as a part of culture. Also, it keeps me laughing. Love, another Drea on fire.
Yes! Drea's unite! Drea's on fire, unite!
Look, the portrait pack is getting stronger every day.
That's right! Portrait pack line starts here!
Yeah. All right. Well, Dre and Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show. This always is a blast. And if you are having a blast listening to us have a blast.
No, wait. I have one thing to say, you guys.
Ooh. Sachet Chante.
The day that this episode comes out is the 9-month anniversary of the last time that all of us were in the same place at the same time.
Oh.
9 months. Because wow. If he was gone for a bit before coronavirus started, and it was when we taped our cat's special bonus episode for Who Shot You Members. So members, please, when you listen, enjoy knowing that's the last time I was in a room with the two best huggers in the world and our little Shih Tzu, Casey.
Oh, yeah. God. You know, Cats just premiered on HBO Max, and it took me back to the rowdy cat screening that we all went to together.
what a time. We were really living our best lives.
Early 2020. It was a whole other world.
Yeah. The fact that it was just earlier this year. Well, if you'd like to support the show, please visit MaximumFun.org/join. And if you'd like to purchase a Jumbotron, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a promotional one. Again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY8031664. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group, it can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/ Who Shot Your Podcast, or send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.